Welcome back to another episode of Strategy Simplified. Japheth here. I'm excited for today's episode on mastering the art of overcoming objections in meetings. If you're looking to elevate your meetings and your influence wherever you are inside your career, then this episode is perfect for you. This session dives into the intricacies of effective communication in meetings using the Pyramid Principle framework. You'll learn the strategies to conquer objections and exhibit confidence in any meeting scenario. Before we get started and jump into the episode, if you're finding value out of the podcast, we'd love your rating and your review, especially on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It helps boost the show's ranking and helps more people find the podcast. All right, let's get into this episode.
Welcome, everybody. Happy Wednesday. My name is Naman, Chief Operating Officer of Management Consulted. I'm joined here by my colleague, Eden. We're so excited to be with you today on this recorded session with a small curated group of folks who are joining us live. Welcome to those of you who are joining us live. Today, we're here to talk about overcoming objections in meetings. And before we dive in, just a couple of announcements as folks are still settling in and you're getting ready to engage over this next hour. Full disclosure, the reason that we run these sessions is so you get a flavor of what our executive communication trainings look like that we run for our Fortune 1000 partners. And so if you represent an organization or lead a team and you find today's session useful and you're interested in upskilling your team to win the trust of key stakeholders, drive action and alignment, advance your agenda, either with external or internal stakeholders, you're going to want to learn more about the full-day trainings that we run for our partners. You can scan the QR code on the slide here to set up a free 15-minute consultation and just learn more about what that training entails and if or if not, it would be a good fit for your organization. And so the QR code is where you can learn more about that. If you are an individual here looking to grow in your presentation and storytelling ability, we also offer one-on-one presentation coaching. And so this would be really tailored to you as an individual and your work product more than the work product of a particular team or division. And so if you find yourself just looking for more of that personal professional development, you can scan the QR code to learn more about what that one-on-one coaching looks like. I'm actually just coming off one of those one-on-one coaching calls that I had earlier this morning, and we were able to drive really quick transformation for an individual who's working on a lot of proposal and pitch decks for a large Fortune 500 company. And so this person is just looking to clarify their story, clarify the unique value proposition that they're working to communicate, and really work to structure a story that addresses the potential objections and pushback that they would get from their prospects. And so we just spent 30 minutes earlier this morning clarifying and updating a story for a particular prospect. And so whether you are in sales or business development, whether you're a VP or director or analyst who's just making consistent presentations, if you're looking to improve, we'd love to work with you one-on-one. Now that we've got that out of the way and you all are scanning the QR code, let's dive into a discussion around overcoming objections inside of our particular meetings. All of us, whether we are junior or senior, are in essence salespeople for our ideas, for our teams, for our proposed approaches. And when you are trying to align a diverse group of stakeholders around a single course or point of action, there's invariably going to be differing opinions. There's invariably going to be pushback. There are invariably going to be questions that are valid. And understanding how to address those questions, how to address those objections in a way that gets everybody on the same page is critical to professional success. And so that's what we're going to talk about today. Before I dive in, I'd love to get to know the folks who are joining us live a little bit more. So Eden, I'm going to ask you just to pop our polls up here for the group. Got two questions for you. If you've joined me before, these are questions you should be used to answering, but they're always really, really helpful for me to get a sense of who's on the call live. And so the first question is around your just level of influence inside of your organization. The second one is who your audience is. So I'll leave these up for about 15 seconds, give you a chance just to very quickly answer these, and then we'll move on with our time together.
All right, we've got about 5 seconds left. Okay, I'm going to share the results. Looks like we've got 11% junior analyst, 67% manages a team, 22% manages an organization.
And then looks like about two-thirds
And
of us are communicating with internal stakeholders versus external. Very, very helpful. So Eden, thank you for popping that up. Thank you for sharing the results. And thank you, folks, for just giving me a sense of where you're at today so I can really tailor our conversation to you. One other question for you before we dive in. Why'd you join today? So you took an hour out of your afternoon to join and have this conversation with us. If you just want to pop in the chat, one thing that would make this session a win for you, that would be really, really helpful for me. And I'll make sure that I address that question or respond to that comment as we move throughout today. So I'll put another 15 or 20 seconds on the clock here and just give you a chance to communicate with us what would make today a win for you.
In today's corporate world, it's not enough to just do good work. How you convey your work determines how it and you are perceived by your stakeholders. Have you ever said something like, "I have to give a presentation, but don't know where to start. I know what I want to say, but I don't know how to say it. The meeting went off the rails. They kept asking me questions and missed the point. I feel stuck in my career. My work isn't getting noticed." If you ever asked yourself any of those questions, our Power Presentations program is for you. In Power Presentations, you work with an expert coach in 10 one-hour sessions on your actual work deliverables. Together, we clarify your key takeaways, work on putting a story together around those key takeaways, ensure that your data visualizations are clear and easy to understand, and make sure that your work is driving your stakeholders towards a decision point. Our goal, to help you put your best foot forward to drive the stakeholder decisions you want and ensure that an unclear presentation doesn't neuter your influence. This is the first time that we're bringing the training we've done with Fortune 500 teams like Meta, CVS Health, American Express, Hershey, and eBay to individual clients. You can learn more about Power Presentations through the link in the show notes.
So the first thing that I want to share with you today is just a formula that I found really, really helpful to overcoming objections. One of the mistakes that I see a lot of people make inside of presentations and inside of meetings is focusing on the resistance instead of focusing on the drivers to that resistance. And so in strategic change management, there are really three drivers that make up a majority of the objections or the resistance that we find to the stories that we're telling. And again, we are all storytellers, no matter what our function or our role is. And so let's walk through these three inputs that lead to resistance. The first is dissatisfaction. The second is vision. And the third are first steps. And when you are able to put a story together that illuminates the dissatisfaction for your stakeholders, lays out a vision, and is also able to address tactical questions, you have the elements of a story that can overcome resistance. Now, this is a tool and this is a formula that can be used both as a diagnostic and as a prescriptive tool. So early on in a particular engagement or conversation, I can use this framework to run a meeting, to put a story together, to start to uncover what is the cause of my stakeholders' unhappiness. Are they able to see the big picture? Do they understand what the next right thing to do would be? I can use this type of framing to help them uncover the answers to those questions. And if I'm coming in a more prescriptive mode, then I can use the same framework to think through, okay, if they aren't unhappy, if they aren't feeling the pain of the status quo, how can I tell a story that will uncover that pain for them? Can I convince them that the story I'm telling, the direction that I'm trying to lead this meeting, is what's best for them? Can I lay out that vision? This is good for you. This is good for the organization. And can I gain alignment around the next right thing for us to do? Vision deals with strategy. Why should I do this? First steps deals with tactics. How do I do this? And I've often found when I get pushback, it's because I don't have alignment around strategy and tactics, right? A lot of folks are good at thinking around one or the other, but I found few that are able to put a story together that address both the why and the how. And so if I can uncover or make my stakeholders feel the dissatisfaction of the status quo, or the dissatisfaction that would come along with indecision, or the dissatisfaction that would come along with making the wrong decision, if I can pair that that dissatisfaction with a broader vision for where the organization or where the team needs to go, and I can add on some very tactical next steps to that vision, I have all the elements that I need to overcome resistance. And so the first step towards overcoming objections is actually putting a story together that's going to help you do that, before the questions arise. So a lot of folks that I coach and that I teach and that I train, they say, hey, when I'm in a meeting, I get a lot of questions. I get a lot of pushback. I get a lot of objections. I'm not sure inside the meeting how to address those. And almost always my first kind of question back to them, my first response back to them is your performance in the meeting isn't actually the issue. It's the story you're putting together before the meeting that's dredging up a lot of the questions and objections that you're not prepared to address. And so if you're able to walk into the meeting better prepared, you will invariably be better prepared to handle the questions and the objections that come your way. And so I want to spend most of our time together actually talking about how I put parts and elements of a story together to address objections before they arise. And then we'll spend some of the time at the end talking about how we address those things verbally inside the meeting. But 80% of the progress you're going to make in addressing objections is going to come from putting a better story together on the front end. And so if you have joined me before for some of these live calls and these trainings, you know that I'm a big proponent of this pyramidal storytelling structure. And I'm not going to walk through this in depth today. As we send out this recording, we'll also include links to prior calls that we've done that include a detailed breakdown of this framework. I'll just give you a high-level refresher right now. The way that I recommend that you put stories together for any meeting that you are running include four elements. The first is context setting. That happens through that situation, complication, question framing that you see at the top of this slide. Here's why we're here today. Here's what we're here to solve. Here's the one question that we need to answer in our time together today. That leads right into my assertion, which is my key takeaway for that day's meeting, for that day's interaction. The key takeaway is often a recommendation. So here's the answer to the question I just raised in that initial context setting. And what I'm going to do today is I'm going to walk you through why this is the right course of action for us to take today, why this is the right thing for us to be focused on right now. And I include three supporting points of rationale for that key takeaway. And those supporting points of rationale I call arguments. They make up the chapters of my story. And this is really where the tailoring happens. And this is really where objections are addressed. And so this is the part of the framework that I'm going to be double clicking into today. It's my job to tell a very curated short story that's tailored to the stakeholders that are going to be in the room and tailored to the time at which I'm speaking to them. So I may have a project life cycle. I might have a deal cycle where I have 8 or 12 interactions with a particular group of stakeholders. My story should change depending on whether I'm at interaction 3 or interaction 9. And the part of the story that really changes are the arguments. They're flexed to the stakeholders, flexed to their function, flexed to what they care about, flexed to the KPIs they're managed to, and also flexed to the point of time we find ourselves at inside of a particular relationship. And inside of each chapter of my story, I have specific data points that reinforce that rationale. So just to refresh and give you a big picture view here, I kick off with context and then the key takeaway that arises from that context. I have three specific reasons why that key takeaway is the right one for that group of people at that point in time. And then inside of each chapter that includes a reason or a point of rationale, I include 2 to 3 data points to really drive that point home. And so today, what we're going to be doing is not talking about the context setting, not talking about the key takeaway, but talking about how you develop points of rationale for a key takeaway that you've already identified. And so your key takeaway could be, you know, as clear as, you know, invest $1 million in annual spend to see, you know, a 10x incremental revenue uplift in the next 3 years. It could be something like that. Your key takeaway could be, hey, I need additional headcount. I need additional budget to act on the priorities that you've laid out for me. Your key takeaway could be as simple as, this is something that's really important for you to know, and here's why. So there are a lot of different flavors to key takeaways. But one thing that never changes is that there are going to be questions around that key takeaway. There is going to be pushback that I get to that key takeaway. So I have to be really, really strategic in the arguments that I choose to reinforce that message. And the challenge is that there are often 25 different reasons that I can think of for why my key takeaway is the right one for me to be presenting. As you all know, I never have the time or the attention of my audience to walk through 25 reasons for them to do something. At max, I've got the time and the attention for 3. And so we go through this curated and curating process to whittle down a list of 25 reasons to 3. And my job is to determine, out of all the reasons that I can bring to the table for my stakeholders to want to act on something, what are the top reasons they need to believe? What are the top things they need to believe? What are the arguments that will drive 80% of the decision? That's my goal when putting together this part of the story. And so here's how I do that in practice. Effective storytelling requires me to know my audience. What do they care about now? And I'm going to walk you through in a few minutes the process that I go through to identify what it is that my audience cares about. Let me first just walk you through how I do this brainstorming. So I take my key takeaway, I take my assertion, and I literally take out pen and paper, and I make 2 columns on my paper. The left-hand column would be the goals of my audience, the goals of my stakeholders. The right-hand column would be the objections that I think they would have to the key takeaway that I've identified. And I just start to think through, what would the goals of my audience be and what would their potential objections be? Here's the way that I do this. I think through previous interactions that I've had with those stakeholders or stakeholders similar to them. What were the questions I got the last time? I leverage my peers and my colleagues. I go to them and I say, hey, I know that you had a meeting with Sally last week. What's on her mind right now? What were the types of questions that you got? What were the types of pushback that you got? What did she really seem to be fixated on in that touch point in that meeting? I leverage gatekeepers, chiefs of staff, executive assistants, et cetera. A box of chocolates can come in really handy, by the way, to grease those wheels. So, hey, this key stakeholder, what's their calendar looking like right now? What are their priorities right now? What do they care about? What do they not care about? Starts to give me some insight into how to tailor a story to address the questions I can expect to receive. I look at roadmaps. If 2/3 of us have internal stakeholders, I look at internal roadmaps and strategic plans and tie back the strategic plan, tie back the roadmap to the story that I'm telling. here's how the recommendation that I'm making, here's how the story that I'm telling ties into the priorities that we as an organization or you as a division have already identified for this year. I also just ask my stakeholders. I set up pre-reads. Try to get 5 minutes with a key stakeholder and say, here's my story high level. Is this what you want to hear? Am I missing something important? Are we already aligned on something here that we don't have to discuss? So those are all strategies that I employ to start to brainstorm what their goals would be and what their potential objections would be as well. And the filter that I'm running both of those elements through is, what will they need to believe to agree with my key takeaway? And then after I've gone through this brainstorming process, I start to think through, what are the top things that I need to address inside of a 15 or 30 minute meeting? I can't speak to all of their goals. I can't speak to all of their potential objections. What are the two or three things that I think are going to drive 80% of the decision? And I address those. Let me show you what this looks like in practice. So I went through an exercise where I pretended that I worked for a large streaming company, right? You can call it Netflix, you can call it Disney Plus, you can call it Hulu, whoever you want to work for today. So let's pretend that my key takeaway is that this company, let's call it Disney Plus. Let's say my key takeaway for Bob Iger and the leadership at Disney is that they need to invest a certain amount of money in US original content to reverse their slowing revenue growth. Now, there are a lot of questions and pushback that I could potentially get to that kind of recommendation or that kind of key takeaway. And so what I've done here is I've brainstormed some reasons that would address some of their goals and objections as I see them. And I don't know anybody at Disney. All I know is what I see publicly in financial statements and what I read in the news. But here are some of the things that I thought through as I was thinking about how I would put a story together for Disney. If this was the key takeaway, what are some things that would have to be true for them to say yes to this? Well, one thing that might have to be true, and one thing that they would have to believe, is that the US market is larger than other markets they could enter. So, okay, I write that down. What's another thing that they might have to believe? They would have to believe that US growth is stronger or strong enough relative to international growth. I'd have to believe that the growth potential in the US was strong enough relative to India, relative to Brazil, relative to EMEA, relative to APAC, for me to invest here as opposed to other geographies. They might have to believe that the strong US dollar would make the US market more valuable to us. They might also have to believe that US consumers are less price sensitive, and so that it makes sense to double down in the US versus other geographies. They might have to believe that the churn here is lower, the rate of unsubscribes. They might have to believe that investing in international content or international expansion would cost us more money. So even though this might seem like a lot of money, it's actually less and offers a greater return than what we get going international. They might have to believe that Wall Street analysts and investors actually value US subscribers more than they value subscribers from other geographies. Whether that's because of a lower churn rate, whether that's because of a higher lifetime customer value. They might have to believe that we have a brand advantage in the US we don't have elsewhere, and that we should leverage that. They might have to believe that content is more than just TV and movies, and that yes, we have TV shows and movies already, but we haven't expanded into areas like gaming. And so they might have to believe that the definition of content is broader than what's generally accepted to be the definition of content. Could be live sports. And they might also have to believe that we have better data from US consumers than we have from consumers in other geographies. And so that the data that we have from US consumers would enable us to inform content creation better for the US market. I have better data, I have better insights that should theoretically increase my chances of creating what a hit movie or a hit TV show because of the data that I have available to me here. There are more reasons that I could think of for why Disney should invest in the US, but this is the type of brainstorming process that I would go through. Speaking to their goals and starting to address some of the questions that they would have if this was the key takeaway that I was going to come to them with. My next job, after brainstorming some of these reasons and obviously validating them with data, would be to think through, okay, what are the top three reasons that I think would drive this decision? And the data would inform that. My pre-read conversations would inform that. My conversations with my team would inform that. And out of these 10 or 12 points of rationale that I have on the slide, I would elevate the top three and say, I don't have time to walk the board through all 12. I need to pick what I think are going to be the most compelling arguments and the most compelling reasons. And we could have a days-long conversation about that, even on this call. Once I've identified the top three, I would then start to address, again, before anyone's ever verbalized an objection, I would try to cut those questions and objections off at the pass by being really strategic with how I order my story. And so there are three main strategies that I recommend for you to order the story that you're putting together for any meeting, for any interaction. And I'm going to walk you through this quickly from right to left. So my recommended order most of the time for teams and clients that I'm working with who are putting together stories is order of impact. It's the right-hand side of this slide. And this says that you should walk through the highest impact area of the story first. So what is the reason that you think is going to drive more of the decision than any other? That's the reason you lead with. So if we go back to the Disney example, if I think that the thing that Disney needs to believe most is that US growth is stronger, and that's the thing that they need to believe the most, then that would be the first part of the story I would walk through. And then I would walk through my other two reasons in descending order of importance. So about 80% of the time, I'm going to recommend that you utilize order of impact in terms of the structure that you're using for your stories. I've never, ever been in a meeting with senior leaders where I have their full time or their full attention for the full time. And so what I don't want to do is save the most important reason for last in those settings, because chances are they would have dropped by then, or chances are they might be a little bit disengaged or fatigued by then. And so I want to hit them early with what I think is the most important reason for them to do what I'm asking them to do. That's order of impact. My personal favorite order is shock and awe. And those of you on this call who know me, that's not going to be a surprise to you. So shock and awe says that I am going to start with the reason that I think you would be most likely to disagree with. Our biggest area of disagreement, that's what I'm going to start with. And I'm going to say, if we can get aligned on that reason, then we're going to be aligned on every other reason as well. And it's like a snowball moving downhill. If we can move past our biggest area of disagreement, we build momentum to gain alignment for everything else. So this starts with the argument, with the rationale that I think would be hardest for my stakeholders to believe. I only recommend you use shock and awe 10% of the time. And I recommend you use it very strategically. So number one, you have to have trust built up with your stakeholders already if you're going to utilize this order. Number two, this works best when you are stuck in a rut of decision making. So if you have been going around and around in circles and have not been able to gain alignment, gain buy-in, get to a decision point, shock and awe can be a really effective meeting approach to say, look, here's what I've identified as the biggest hang-up to us making this decision. And I'd like to address this first, and I'd like to discuss this first. And we're not going to move on until we've gotten some kind of resolution on this area. So when you feel stuck with stakeholders you have trust with, shock and awe can be really effective. The opposite of shock and awe is consensus building. Consensus building says, I'm going to start with the reason I think will be easiest for you to believe. And I will build my story up to the reason I think will be hardest for you to believe. Consensus building works best with stakeholders you don't have trust with. So if you're walking into a meeting and you are an unknown quantity, or if you are walking into a meeting that you know is going to be particularly contentious, if you know that there is someone there or a group of people there who are just for whatever reason fundamentally opposed to the key takeaway that you're bringing to the table, consensus building can be helpful to build momentum in the room. If you start with a reason that you think is going to be easiest for them to believe, you get heads nodding early. And you build trust on the fly so that when you get to the reason you think is going to be hardest for them to believe, you've greased the wheels a little bit. I would only also use consensus building 10% of the time. I would argue that most of us have more trust with our stakeholders than we know. It's what I hear from, we have over 50 Fortune 1000 partners. What I hear from VPs and directors and even the C-suite at those partners is that they trust their teams, they trust their managers, they trust their leaders, and they want power to remain distributed inside of their organization. What I mean by that is that they want decision-making to happen at the lower levels. They want people to come to them with strong takeaways and strong recommendations. The trust is already there. And so consensus building implies that the trust isn't there. I would argue for most of us who are presenting to internal stakeholders, that's not the optimal approach. Order of impact would be the approach that I would default to. Unless I know that I'm walking into a unique situation. I'm going to pause there for a minute and just let us digest what we've talked through so far. I'm going to, coming out of just a 1 minute break, we're going to do a little exercise. So I'm going to give you a minute to digest what we've just talked about, take a mental break. If you're interested in learning more about what our presentation training looks like, either for organizations or for individuals, you can go ahead and scan that QR code. And then we'll move into a short exercise and activation. And then I'll talk about what it looks like to address objections verbally inside of a meeting as well. So what we're going to do now is we're going to do a short exercise. Both Eden and I are going to tell you a little bit about ourselves. And we're going to tell you about what we care about when we think about choosing a place to live. And so we are your stakeholders for this particular exercise. Your job is to craft one story that would convince both of us, two very different people, both of us to move to your neighborhood. And so we're going to tell you a little bit about ourselves. We're going to tell you about what we care about. Your job is to be taking notes. Your job is to be thinking through, okay, what would Naman's objections be to moving to my neighborhood based on what he's told me about himself? What would Eden's objections be to moving to my neighborhood or moving to my city or moving to my country based on what she's told me she cares about? And then how can I put one story together that has three chapters that would speak to both of these very different people? Right? Often when we're presenting, when we're putting stories together, when we're in meetings, we're never just presenting to one stakeholder. We're presenting to diverse groups of stakeholders that represent different interests, different functions, who are managed to different KPIs. And so the challenge is to put one story together that addresses the questions and objections that these very diverse people would have. So I'll go first. I'll go quickly, and then I'll turn the floor over to Eden. So I live in the Austin, Texas area, and there are a couple of reasons why I chose to live here. Number one, I don't like cold weather. Number two, I really value access to a large city and the live sports that provides, the live sports entertainment opportunities that provides, the live music opportunities that provides. I also love how much green space exists inside of the Austin area. Large network of parks, trails, et cetera, that my family like to take advantage of. And then finally, I appreciate being close to a fairly large airport. I travel quite a bit for my work, so airport accessibility is important to me. And so those are some of the things that I think about when I think about where I'm going to live. And so I'll turn it over to Eden. I think there might be some things that are similar between Eden and I, or some things that are different. So I'll let her speak to what she cares about.
Awesome. You're actually making a really great case for everyone to move to Austin. So thanks for that, Naman. I live in far Northern California. I really value, and I moved up here for the weather, very similar. It's more rainy. It's like mountainous. There's skiing, like, you know, an hour away from me. There's also a beach 3 hours away from me. And so I really love nature. I also really value the small town feel and the whole Sasquatch country vibe. I'm really all about that. And I also love the idea of being able to raise my children in an area where community is really important. And so, that's what I value.
Amazing. Amazing. So we're two different people who live in two different places. Can you take what we said and put one story together that includes three reasons that would resonate with both of us? And so you might decide that you're going to kind of blend what we said together and have each argument like speak to both of us, or you might decide, hey, you know what? I'm going to craft my first argument to speak to Naman and my second argument to speak to Eden. I'll let you decide the approach that you take, but I'm going to put 3 minutes on the clock and I'm going to ask you to draft your arguments in the chat. So type them in the chat. Don't hit enter yet, but draft them in the chat. And then when the timer goes off, you can hit enter. And we'd love to see some of your responses and pick a couple people to give feedback to as well. So I'll put 3 minutes on the clock. Go ahead and convince us to move to your city. All right, that's 3 minutes. Time flies when you're having fun. So if you want to share your arguments with us in the chat, go ahead and hit enter. We'd love to see what you came up with.
Would you like me to read these out?
Eden, go for it. That'd be great.
Okay. All right. So I've got, you should move to my city because it is one of the sunniest cities in North America. It has an international airport, and the core of the city is only a 15-minute drive from the Canadian Rockies, one of the largest stretches of mountain ranges in North America.
Okay. I love that. Tiwa, well done. So you hit on sunny, which I think I mentioned. You hit on the airport, which I mentioned, and then you hit on the mountains that Eden mentioned. And my guess is you probably live in either Edmonton or Calgary. And I know that a lot of the year there is cold, but you didn't mention the cold because I said I didn't like the cold. So you selectively kept out, right, some of the things that I said that I didn't care about, which I think is very strategic. So instead of mentioning temperature, you mentioned sun. So you were honest without being too honest. So well done. I like the rationale and the arguments that you put in place to convince us to move to what I think are Calgary or Edmonton. You can correct us if we're wrong in the chat. Amazing. And then I actually pulled this up as well, Eden. I'm seeing Simon's here. So Simon's in Milwaukee. Okay. Tons of excellent outdoor opportunities and green space. Love it. Mid-sized city with small town feel. Well done addressing both of our concerns. Right. I mentioned city. Eden mentioned small town. Right. Close to Chicago, access to larger airport and amenities there. Well done. One of my questions for you might have been, hey, what's the connectivity like out of Milwaukee? And you're kind of preempting that and saying, hey, well, you know what? Chicago's pretty close by, and you get all that access there. Summer is beautiful, all four seasons. Okay, love it. That again addresses what I said and what Eden said. Okay. And you're addressing one of the things that I mentioned right on here. You said the winter can be long and cold, but you get used to it. So it's like, hey, Naman, you said you didn't like cold weather, but actually, it's not as big of a deal as you think. Or you can always leave. So, I love it. Well done, Simon. I like Wisconsin, believe it or not. I don't know if I'm moving there anytime soon, but I think it's a lovely state and really beautiful. So well done to you both. Great job of thinking through what both of us said we cared about and putting stories together that address both of our concerns. And if this was a, you know, an actual meeting, an actual story that we were putting together, one thing that I would encourage you to also think about is when I have multiple stakeholders I'm addressing, who's the most important one? Right. So is it Eden? Is it me? Is it somebody else? And that can be another filter that I use to determine what the order of my story is. And so in this scenario, if Eden is the most important person in the room, then the arguments that address what she cares about should come first. And so we didn't tell you that in this particular exercise. We were both of equal importance. But generally speaking, there will be one person in the room who's the most important. Their buy-in is the most important. Their yes is the most important. So keep that in mind when you are communicating with diverse groups of stakeholders. That was fairly easy in the sense that Eden and I told you what we cared about. But again, in the real world, it's difficult sometimes to uncover what stakeholders really care about. And so I mentioned to you a few minutes ago kind of some of the strategies that I employ to determine what some of my stakeholders' objections would be. But I want to hear from you all. Like, what are some strategies that you employ? How do you uncover stakeholder objections before you walk into a meeting? If you want to unmute yourself and kind of talk through what you do, we'd love to hear from you. If you want to pop your ideas in the chat, we'd love to hear from you. But I wanted to take a minute or two to make space for us to learn from each other as well, because I know that there are strategies that I mentioned that that are good, but they're not the end all be all to uncovering stakeholder objections. So does anyone have a perspective they'd like to contribute to the group? As you're thinking, I'll quickly walk through some of the strategies that I mentioned a few minutes ago, just to refresh our memories. So, number one was just going to the stakeholder and asking them. So, I call that a pre-read, right? Set up a 5-minute call and get feedback on your high-level story. Number two was going to colleagues and peers, right? Getting their perspective on what the stakeholder group would care about. Number three was going to a gatekeeper, a chief of staff, an executive assistant, et cetera, and getting an insider's view at what that stakeholder or stakeholder group would care about. Number four was referencing strategic roadmaps or strategic plans or other internal documentation. Documentation that tells you what the KPIs are that your stakeholders are managed to. I know that the goals of our organization this year are X. So how can I tie my story back to the goals that my stakeholders are managed to? Could be a revenue number, could be a profit number, could be some other type of KPI. But how can I tie my story back to what they care about? Often they are comped or partly comped based on those goals. So I'm really gonna hit close to home if I can tie my story back to the achievement of those things. And if I am talking to perhaps a client or a prospect that's publicly traded. Number five, I can listen to investor calls and analyst calls and hear company leadership talk to analysts about what their goals are, what their priorities are, what their roadmap looks like for the upcoming year, and get a lot of insight from those types of interactions as to what that particular organization cares about right now and what their goals are for this fiscal year. And if I'm selling into that organization, I can use some of the language that their leadership has used inside of my story. And I can tie my story back to some of the strategic priorities that they've laid out. So those are five strategies right there. There are more than that that exist. And so if you have one that you particularly like to employ that I haven't mentioned, pop it in the chat. We'd love to learn from you as well. One of the things that I found really, really helpful is I think through the questions and the objections that I might get to a particular story is to map them out on paper. And so here, I've mapped out some common objections I get to that pyramidal story approach I walked you through at the very beginning of our time together. So these are some objections I get pretty often to that type of framework. And I've actually gone through and I've written them out, and I've written out a response, at least at a high level, to those objections as well. And this exercise does two things for me. Number one, it actually reduces the need for me to be able to think on my feet, because I've done the thinking ahead of time. Number two, it aligns me and my team around who answers what question. When you're presenting in a group, one of the most awkward things inside of that group presentation context is getting a question and not knowing who in your group is going to answer it. So you're kind of looking around, or you're looking on the Zoom, and there's this awkward silence. There's this umming and awing and humming and this, that, and the other, right? And there's just this awkward transition before somebody decides to answer the question or someone decides to answer the objection, because you haven't determined ahead of time who addresses what kind of objection. So mapping the potential questions and the objections that you might get out on paper allows you to pre-assign the responses as well. So let's say James and Eden and I are presenting together. We could say, okay, if we get a question or an objection around this, that's James. If we get a question or objection around this area, that's Eden. And if we get a question or objection around this other area, that's Naman. And so we know ahead of time who's answering which question. It reduces the awkwardness in the meeting. It reduces the pauses, right, which make us come across as less credible, and allow us to just very, very quickly address the question, address the objection from the right person. So that person knows ahead of time they're responsible for being prepared to answer those kinds of questions, whether they want to write themselves a script or a talk track, whether they want to do a little bit of extra research into that area. They know that's their area of responsibility, and they're going to step in and just start to address that objection or question when it's brought up. So mapping the objections and the responses out like this helps you get aligned as a team, and also helps assign out that responsibility for who's going to answer the question. So how do you actually answer the question? Or how do you actually address the objection inside the room? Whether you're virtual or in person, I've identified, just through my own experience, I've been doing this for almost 15 years now, seven tactics for how to handle objections that are still thrown my way in a meeting. The goal of what we've talked about today is that I get less questions and less objections because I put in the work ahead of time. But I'm never going to be able to address 100% of the questions or the objections that I'm going to get. I'm never going to be able to anticipate everything. So when I still get those things, those pieces of pushback in a meeting, what do you do? Here are the seven things that I do. Number one, I acknowledge the validity of the question. James, that's a great question. James, that's a great point. Right? That just helps me build rapport. And to be honest with you, it also buys me 5 seconds to think. Right? Like it's a helpful transition statement. Right? And just acknowledges that, hey, you're not dumb or stupid or confused for answering, for asking that question. It's a good point. The second thing that I do is I try to determine the right time to address the objection. Right? You are not under any obligation to answer every question that you get in the moment. So it is a fair thing for me to say, James, that's a great question. I'm actually getting there in 5 minutes, right? Do you mind if we hold the response for now? Because I have a slide that's going to speak to that. Totally fair answer, right? Or you could also say, hey, James, that's a great question. I'd love to hold my answer for that until the end when we get to Q&A. Is that okay? Right? Because you understand that the answer to that question is going to open up a can of worms or lead you down a rabbit trail you don't want to go down right now. Like you always retain the ability to not answer the question in the moment. If you do decide that now is the right time for you to answer the question, I lead my answer with the key takeaway. So I don't say, hey, James, that's a great question, and then give you like five pieces like of meandering data points and then get to like the answer at the end. I give you the answer first. I say, James, that's a great question, but actually that's not true. Here's why. And then give you one or two reasons why kind of maybe your hypothesis or your understanding might not be 100% accurate. As I'm walking through my answer, I try to ensure that I remain verbally structured. So, James, I'm just going to keep picking on you, right? So like, hey, James, that's a great question, right? But actually it's not 100% true, and there are a couple of reasons why. Number one, blah blah blah. Right? Number two, right, XYZ. So I try to remain verbally structured in the response that I'm giving, because often the response that I'm giving doesn't have necessarily like a slide that corresponds with it. There's no visual fallback for the audience. And so when there's no visual fallback, I have to ensure that I'm verbally structured. I have to ensure that the audience is able to follow my thought process and my reasoning all the way through without a visual aid. And so remaining verbally structured is one way that I can do that. I often try to end with a question. So I say, James, does that resonate with you? James, does that make sense? Like a question just to get some kind of feedback quickly in the moment on if my answer landed. James, do you have any follow-ups to that? Right. And quite often the answer is, hey, no follow-ups. That makes sense. Thank you so much. Right, but I want to see if the answer landed and was received as intended. And then finally, if necessary, I can take things offline. So maybe James is like, hey, you know what? Like, thank you. That's helpful, but I have five follow-up questions for you. I'm like, hey, James, thanks so much. Do you mind writing those down? I'd be happy to address those in a 5-minute follow-up call. Or I'd be happy to share the appendix to this deck with you after we jump off the meeting. And once you do a deep dive into the data, I think that those five questions will be answered. And so that's my final fallback, is offering an offline connect. And so executing these seven tactics in order has really helped me. Number one, just stay calm when I receive questions or pushback because there's a process that I've internalized. And number two, come across as more credible and confident because I have a structure to the way that I'm answering the question, because I'm organized in the way that I'm doing it. So the experience often trumps content in terms of importance. The experience that your stakeholders have of you is often just as important, if not more important, than the content that you're communicating. So, yes, your answer is going to be data-driven. Yes, you've done the research. Yes, you've done the work. But if you communicate that answer in a way that doesn't lend itself to a good experience, it's not going to land. And so these seven steps help me give my audience a good experience, even if they disagree with me. And so I'll leave this up for a minute so you can take notes, you can take a screenshot, you can do whatever you want to do with it. And while I'm doing that, I'll just say thank you to all of you for joining me today. I really enjoyed this conversation and this discussion around how to anticipate objections ahead of a meeting, how to put a story together that addresses those things, and then here at the end, how to verbally address those questions and objections that you still get inside of a particular interaction.
To become a more effective presenter and communicator, join our Power Presentations program for one-on-one coaching. Link in the show notes to learn more about this program. In addition, join us for a future live event featuring discussions and topics just like the one you heard from today. Get on our website, managementconsulted.com, to register for an event or just check out the link in this episode's show notes. All right, we'll catch you on the next episode of Strategy Simplified.